and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Gabriel Grayson, and he has written a book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, with two other people, Gerald Nierenberg and Henry Calero. Do I have that right?
Yes, exactly. Jerry Nierenberg and Henry Calero. They were the original authors of the first edition, which has been around for some 50 years.
And, wow, I hadn't realized
over
that.
A million copies that are in print.
Wow. This is a very interesting book. I mean, just is it really that possible to read people?
Well, it's certainly possible to tune into a variety of nonverbal communication pieces, which once identified, yes, clusters, not individual movements, but clusters of things. As a young boy growing up in Philadelphia, my mother and dad were deaf, and so I was fascinated by sign language, how they could communicate with each other in every known way, including humor, with just a little movement of their face, hands, and body. And I think it's from that beginning that I started looking at hearing people and realizing that their communication was very little in terms of what their words were, but what the rest of the communication was nonverbal.
And it seems to work across the board. Does it work as well with women as men, or are women harder to read, or how does that work?
No, women are so much better equipped than our group in so many different ways, and certainly in this area. The classic one-liner that a man chases a woman until she catches him is more than just a piece of cleverness. 90% of all relationships are instigated by the woman. The man may think he's in control, but he is certainly not in control. And it's a question of a greater sensitivity. We sometimes talk about it as women's intuition, but a greater sensitivity in looking at someone and getting a feeling about him or her, friend or foe or sexual partner, a whole variety of unconscious feelings.
And you also go into the book and how we can look at people, at like a woman. Say we're looking we're in a bar and we need to know what the woman's interested in. So there are ways to tell before you even talk to the woman.
Yeah, well, again, the some of the male-female signals, women, first of all, what the poets and the philosophers have been telling us for many, many thousands of years is correct. No matter what a woman's accomplishments, character, intellectual content, et cetera, it's what she looks like. And that's unfortunate because it is not really what a woman is all about. However, that's the thing that first attracts men. And every study and common sense often will tell you that. It is then reading some signs, well, that she is open, vulnerable, or welcoming your approach. And so these things can be ascertained in conversation briefly, or in movements from the woman herself. It's something that some men are good at and some aren't. Some women who are not particularly attractive, and most women are not extraordinarily attractive, most men are not extraordinarily attractive, but yet we are moving towards 7 billion people in the world, so something's at work there.
Absolutely, that's a lot of people. But it's interesting how you go through all the different body parts until, you know, in the book, and they explain, you know, what tells you what, and what you can tell what kind of mood they're in by looking at them, and how whether they lick their lips or how they shake a hand. And, you know, I used to work with a guy who every time I shook his hand was always so clammy.
Uh-huh. Now, clammy, yes.
So what does that indicate?
Well, you say you used to work with him. I'm assuming you don't work with him anymore.
No.
Yeah, no, this is not a good sign. Sometimes the actual physical contact of a handshake is too overbearing, a testosterone display of who's the strongest of the two people, or clammy like that, or weak. These are all discernible ways to ascertain who the heck you really are meeting and talking to. And, of course, the face is the central place you're looking, some 3,000 different variations we can make in that area, and that's part of how we are reading this. These ideas are much more than pop psychology. There have been literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of nonverbal communication signals that scientists have written down in the last 50 years.
And businessmen can actually read this book and decide from their their client's reaction whether their client's going to be okay, whether they can trust. I would assume you could do that.
Yeah, certainly you get a feeling, and that feeling is something that you should tune into and go with, no matter. It depends, of course, on what the situation is. If you're looking for a job, you're just meeting someone, or you are just casually meeting someone, what one person, the status or the power one person has over the other, all these pieces are taken into the overall evaluation. Again, it's not one single thing. Often people see pictures of a woman with her arms folded in front of her, and this they think, well, that immediately means that she's rejecting the man or is saying no to a situation. Possibly, but it also may be that she's just chilly. There are other explanations.
Right. So you have to read things right, too.
Yeah, you would have to read her face, her other body movements, what the situation is, et cetera, et cetera.
So do you find yourself doing that with people, reading them? Everybody, when you walk down the street, do you find yourself looking at other people and thinking of these different things?
Yeah, well, it's fun. I mean, it is. And riding the subways in New York City, it's practically a Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey circus down there. And you can look up and down the car and see people, get a feeling of about how old they are, what they do, what their expressions are, how their movements are. I mean, life is about movement, and nonverbal communication is about reading these movements. But there are other times you're just relaxed and reading yourself. And it's my dearest friend is a psychiatrist, and he has often said that when he comes into a room, people are nervous about saying anything because somehow he's going to be analyzing them.
Right. Oh, I can imagine.
Excuse me. That's not necessarily the truth. I mean, you're not constantly tuned into it. But in fact, we all have the ability, and a book of this sort, which is a primer into various areas, can give you a head start on the subject.
It makes me want to go to work and take the book and try to figure out who likes me and who doesn't. You know?
I mean,
to know something about somebody else without even asking them is pretty cool to me. I mean, I think, wow, that would be very useful to know. Because then you can know who's going to stab you in the back, maybe.
Well, yes, watching your back, I think that's exactly where that expression comes from.
Especially in this day and age, you know. But, I mean, you can't, can you tell anything by what a person says? Like, say you're having a phone conversation. You're having a phone conversation with me. Can you tell anything about me from the way I talk?
Certainly, speech is a major part in the breakdown. Classically, it is 7%, which in face-to-face conversations have to do with the words spoken, the blah, 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 blah that we all endlessly live in 24/7. Some 55% is nonverbal, but 38% is, in fact, the intonation of the voice and getting a feeling. And as soon as we begin speaking with a person, we listen to him or her, it also clearly you get a feeling, and it influences your thinking about the person. Certainly, if you go into a party, into a room, and physically see an attractive woman, and she turns around and says, "Honey, how about another vodka and tonic?" The sound of her voice, the kind of way she presents herself once she opens her mouth, changes everything. And you wouldn't know that until you heard her begin to speak.
Right, absolutely. I'm thinking, I had a situation just recently where somebody threatened me over the phone, and I was thinking, reading your book, I was thinking, I wonder if there were signs that I could tell whether the guy was serious or not, you know, and I mean, the way people speak, what they say, and how they say it, you can sometimes read between the lines and know whether they're very, but you can't always. I mean, there are people that are just unstable to begin with.
I think about 5% of the American public is unstable, and shows that over and over again, which equates to millions of people, whether they still don't believe that President Obama is a United States citizen or that he is a Muslim rather than a Christian. You can head out and put facts on the table, but there are some folks who just never take it in, although they function in society. But that's absolutely always, part of it is, it does not, reading in nonverbal communication, it doesn't have a mathematical certitude. It is a human observational art. But then, any time of any kind of psychological talking cure in psychology or psychiatry, it doesn't work clearly for everybody on a mathematical basis. So it is a true discipline and art form, and there are times you can be mistaken. I would suggest, if you really wanted to see some of this dramatized, there are two wonderful, now several years, I believe, both of them have been running television shows, network television shows, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday and Friday. The one is called The Mentalist, and the other is called Lie to Me.
I like The Mentalist, yes.
Yeah, I like The Mentalist a lot myself. And
well, what he's able to tell just from talking to the other person, you know.
Yes.
But he uses a lot of deception, too. I mean, he's very deceptive about, he'll say, you know, something out of the blue and make people, he's instantly able to make people think something that isn't true.
Yes, well, he again, the kind of distraction, the kind of thing he throws in, or accusatory language, it's a Sherlock Holmes kind of story, but the indices of who is doing what, how people are standing in relation to each other, how they look at each other. This is even more done in the Lie to Me series, where show videotapes of celebrities who are lying to the public and are shown to be liars after the fact. We don't like to use the word liar anymore. We seem to use the word, how are we going to spin this story?
Yeah, exactly.
Seems to take, it doesn't sound in as transgressing against the Ten Commandments as actual lying. But, and we have a lifetime of this, observing this, and all the major institutions of our society, presidents, governors, mayors, have been caught deeply in a lie. And this is very, very clear. In a sense, the more power you have, intellectually, financially, or in a status way, it's easier to lie, because it's less, you're going to suffer less for it. You're going to do your 4 years, or you're going to do your, you can, in fact, leave and move away. You're going to continue to live comfortably, even if you are disgraced, quote unquote, in a lie, as a governor recently here in New York was, who's now back on television,
right,
doing a television show. Governor Spitzer, I find astounding that that there is this shortness of memory, as it were. But and Americans can feel a sense of redemption and often have very short-term memory as to what a history of a person is.
And in the book, you group in a different thing. And the first section is about becoming an avid reader of body language, and it was written all over his face. And then the third one's talking with hands and other parts of the body. And then fourth is what's with the attitude. And five is the relationships and the body language. Now, which is the most important part of the body to look at when you're doing? I mean, is it more the face? Is it more, or is it more other things that tell you more?
Well, it's interesting. In the deaf world, in sign language, while actual signs are being done, the center of attention of the deaf person is on the mouth, on the face, where you can be slightly moving your lips more than one normally would, and you look at the other signs that are going on in periphery. You also are standing wider apart from the other person. This is to both read the person and also to give yourself space to do that. So, yes, if you ask me for one single place, it is the place hearing and deaf people look first, and that is at the face, and that can reveal a great deal. I find it interesting in my class, the whole department at the new school that I chair, that we have students who come down to the new school from one of our divisions, the Parsons School of Design, which is probably the number one design school in the country. And they, many of them, a high percentage of them, are Asians, are from Korea. And when they come into the sign language class, often there's an aesthetic that they pick up nicely in their face, hands, and body, but the hardest part for them is to show emotions on their faces, because in their culture, it is uncool. It isn't done. And many of them, after finishing here in New York, will go back to Seoul or where whatever city they came from in Korea, or back to the Far East, where this is something that you don't do. And it was a downer or ridiculed for many years as the inscrutable Oriental, as a put-down expression, because no matter what the negotiation was, you couldn't see happy, sad, hungry, dumb movement. And to combine this with the relationship of the movement in sign language is extremely difficult and often takes more work. Some people, and certainly women, are far better in showing their thoughts and feelings on their faces than men are.
Right.
The strong silent type, the John Wayne kind of Clint Eastwood thing in nonverbal communication is not a compliment. I mean, you're not communicating. I mean, it is not something that we may like it from a toughness, super macho kind of thing, but it is extremely difficult to read a person like that, because they are in fact holding back, and holding back in a, perhaps a variety of ways, in a temperament or an intellectual way.
And it's interesting that one of the things you talk about in the book is when someone has lost interest in what you're saying. I mean, when you, if you're talking, I find myself going on and on sometimes, and I've always, often wondered, well, I wonder if the other person really cares what I'm saying, or, you know, are they just pretending they care? You know, how much do we go through life and pretend we're interested in what people have to say a lot of times when we're really not?
Well, there are times we have to. When we're students, we have to sit in a class for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours for a workshop, perhaps. And but once you get tuned into it,
haven't we all come up with a guy, found somebody who we just can't get them to stop talking?
Oh, sure. Yep, that's the blowhard, blah blah blah. But in a sense, a professional teacher is one who can get charismatically involved with the class, both in an intellectual, using intellectual powers, but using humorous powers. I know if I'm in a class and I see some young woman just keeps, you know, bobbing her foot up and down, I can have an easy feeling that she'd rather be somewhere else at the moment.
Absolutely.
And that she's not tuning in. And I call it. Or because of the addiction nature of what we all, or many of us, have to plastic and twiddling our thumbs and endlessly doing emails and all of this business, it's really hard for many students to even go for an hour without not being able to hold focus for even an hour on what's going on. And I have found it's easier just to give a 10-minute break after the first hour for everybody, because they just, no kidding, they get scared, they get nervous, they feel they have to. I've had students, young women in their early 20s, have told me that they do hundreds of emails every day. I mean, hundreds. And I thought they were kidding at first, but
wow.
And I asked them, does it mostly with girlfriends, or you're meeting, you know, that kind of thing? And they say yes, but also both women I talked to in the open class was getting something like 10 or 15 emails a day from their fathers. And I just find that is very strange and very weird.
I would say.
I can understand, you know, being concerned about your daughter in the big city, in the village, et cetera, et cetera. But gradually, I mean, their children don't talk to their parents 10 or 15 times a year. But this is, to me, obsessive, using this this device that's interruptive. And there have been many studies on this. You can't really focus on a variety of things, even though you think you can, at the same time. And we are called on to be multitaskers in the digital revolution that we live in.
And the first chapter was talks about the airport. What you can observe if I picked up the airport is really, really fascinating. I mean, these pictures that they show you, the different pictures of what these people look like. Can you really observe behavior like this in an airport? I mean, if you take this book to the airport, will you see people that look like they're in these positions? I mean, is it really that easy to tell?
Because of the anxiety level that is at airports about timing and meeting and all of that sort of thing of having taken a trip out from the city to get there, yes, these are one of the features of this new edition of How to Read a Person Like a Book are all new pictures of people, and the opening sequence of observing people in an airport is exactly, it's almost strange. It's almost like they're posing for you. I mean, you see people in various positions talking on the telephone in a kind of hidden way, an open way, a business way, gesticulating. Gesticulation is just part of our normal being. I mean, that's where really our original, there's something like more than 6,000 languages spoken around the world today. Sign language was the original one, and nonverbal communication is a part of that. And so even people who are born blind, congenitally blind, when they are in discussion, they will move their hands and gesture. Not that they've seen anybody else do it, but in fact it's a normal part of the communication process. So, yeah, an airport is a terrific place, and usually have to wait for hours for one reason or another. Sure, you can read, do what you wish, but also to look around, and you can see vignettes, as are described in the book, of people in various stages in this transition process when they're waiting or going to a plane or a foreign city or under some sort of pressure or it's something that you, it is an excellent place, as the book suggests, to see people and what they're really doing and thinking, whether they even want to be there or not.
It's interesting, in the society we live in, too. I mean, just staring at somebody is not considered very nice. I mean, if you ever come in eye-to-eye contact with somebody and they realize that you're looking at them, it's kind of an uncomfortable feeling. And I mean, especially where I live, you know, you can't do that. People just take exception to that.
You're right.
We live in a very, very paranoid society, I think, now.
No, with men, it is it's territorial. It is sizing up another person. In different societies, you can get into a fight.
Right.
In that sense.
Or what are you looking at, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And they may even say that to you if you look at them long enough.
You know, what are you looking at? Right. And no, absolutely. There are folks who are more tuned in to that, and they see it as a kind of an affront or a challenge, when in fact you just may be looking in the general direction. But to be aware of that, because we are also, of course, giving off, as soon as you make an appearance anywhere in public, information about yourself, the way you're dressed, the way you're walking, the way you conduct yourself, the way you carry yourself. And we get those, we don't always realize we're watching others. Perhaps others hopefully are watching us. And in different situations, it can be a positive thing or a negative thing.
And also folding your arms, I find that fascinating. A lot of people fold their arms, you know, like they're trying to hide something.
Yeah, that's the classic, and there is certainly a way to discern that. But once again, it's not just the folding;
right.
It's a conglomerate, a cluster.
You just can't take one thing like that. You have to take everything into consideration of what you're saying.
Exactly,
right.
And it's something that builds. It's not you get started with one How to Read a Person Like a Book, but then you move into other books with. Different kinds of approaches. What I tried to do in the book, again, is an overall view of the subject to get you tuned into it, because this is really what's happening, and most people are unconscious about it, are unaware of it, even though as animals, and we are in fact emulating animals in so many of these movements, Charles Darwin in 1872 wrote about the similarities between humans and animals and their behavior patterns, and we have found that much, if not all, well, almost almost all of his observations in more modern scientific inquiry have been proven correct. And so this is not something that's just coming, you know, in a, the awareness of it is recent. If we talk about the early 60s, late 50s, I mean, that's really when it's become a discipline, a time in which people have devoted their time and energies and careers to studying the subject. But in fact, it has obviously always existed. And but now, I just think there's a way greater awareness in the American public with political figures and others as to how they are communicating themselves, no matter what they're saying, blah, 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 from their mouths.
Right. So it's this question of studying all the things in this book and then watching people and seeing all the different signs and adding it up in your head. And you know, you're not always going to come up with a 100%
sure.
Yes, that's the way they are, but it's going to work a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting, too. An offshoot of this, which is I've seen about the last 8 or 10 years, and especially I've observed it here in the Upper West Side of New York, is baby sign language, or having communications between hearing women and hearing children using sign language before the child can speak. And I've gone to a couple of these sessions where the women are seated on the floor with another woman with a guitar getting the child's attention, and then starting using basic pieces of sign language. And I have seen follow-ups to studies that show that when the child who has been exposed to sign language begins to speak, he or she has a 12-point IQ advantage higher than the child who has not been exposed.
That's
12 points is an awful lot.
Yeah.
And I've been very impressed by that aspect of the communication process.
So basically anybody can use a book like this. I mean, it's not just meant for, you didn't just write it for one particular person. It has many, many uses. I mean,
sure. It's it's something that there are materials in there that are modern and new based on the original work by Jerry and Henry,
mm-hmm.
but I've tried to make it into a very readable, useful book where you can say, I see that, what that means. I mean, I've always wondered about it, or being totally tuned into new ways of communication. There is a way in which a woman can communicate her vulnerability or interest in a man by exposing her wrists.
Hmm.
And then you say, well, what the heck is that all about? I've never heard that. But in fact, men do respond to that kind of vulnerability on an unconscious level. So there are things like that work that women could benefit in that sense, as well as men, or now with the seemingly endless recession that we're in a job situation as well, in terms of how to present yourself.
Are there people that you just can't read at all? I mean, are there any? I mean, it seems like you do it involuntarily most of the time. But I mean, are there just certain people that you can't read or can't get anything from?
There are folks who, because they are so convoluted in their thinking and approach, will give off a series of movements, sometimes contradictory movements, which are that go beyond what they're saying, and you discern that they're not just trying to fool you by using. They already read the book, so they know how to.
Right.
I don't think you can fake it. I don't think you can learn certain techniques, but it's really that internal universe that ultimately is working, and you will show yourself in one place or another. You can't. I don't think you can always be on quote-unquote good behavior or doing things right. But there are those who, yes, are more difficult to read. But in general, that's not the case. And we tend to grow hardened in so many areas. I find it interesting. Do you have an idea, David, about how often an average adult laughs every day.
Hmm. I'm trying to think how much I laugh. I don't think I laugh all that much, but maybe I'm not aware of how much I do.
I'm just curious because I have a point I want to make here, but I mean, what, how, in terms of yourself and looking around the world, about how often, as a grown-up, as an adult?
I'll bet at least 10 times a day.
Well, the average isn't much much more than that. It's in that 15, 16, 17 area.
Hmm. Wow.
But do you have an idea of how much the average preschooler laughs every day?
Probably much higher.
How much higher do you think?
Maybe as much as 50 a day?
Let's keep going.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious.
Wow, that in itself is... What's the final figure? I'm curious.
The final figure can approach 400 times a day.
What?
A preschool child is so delighted it's all brand new to him or her, but that they're responding to the moment without shadowing thoughts and preconceived notions and all kinds of garbage, as it were, that get into our psyches that our gray cells can't run together just quickly, and we get less and less sensitized to the craziness, the funniness, the absurdity that's going on around us. And I think that difference is a very telling one. From
that's amazing, man.
15 to 18 into the 400 range, because we don't appreciate and tune in to the moment of what we're looking. I mean, the whole business has to do, and I was interested in where they were going to put the book at Barnes & Noble, and the ones here in Manhattan, they put it in the psychology self-improvement section. And that's really, really what it is, how to be a larger, greater, more kind, loving, understanding human being of other people who may not, you may feel critical toward, and most of conversation is and always has been gossip, and much of it is negative, that the other person hasn't been given the same gifts that you have mentally, physically, or spiritually. And you can discern that much more quickly if, in fact, you're aware of body language and nonverbal and communication.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think we judge a little too quickly sometimes.
Absolutely.
I mean, this book will help us. Well, there's so much more in the book. We don't have time to go into it all, but this is absolutely fascinating. And thank you for being with us. We've just about run out of time. The book, again, is How to Read a Person Like a Book. It's from Square One Publishers, and it's in all your bookstores. It's only $13.95, so you're not... It's very affordable. And it's been great to talk to you, Gabriel Grayson. I thank you very much.
Thank you, David. I enjoyed it.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.